There's nothing like hearing kids tell the Christmas story. But, of course, you can't tell the Christmas story without children. Literally. It's about God choosing to become a baby, which in itself is a pretty amazing fact. When you think about the way the world looked at children in that time, children were considered unimportant and disregarded until they could make a contribution to society. It was legal in the Roman world to practice what was called exposure, leaving unwanted children exposed to the elements. If you didn't like the gender of your child, if a child was born with deformities, it was legal to abandon the child. In Greek and Roman languages, the word for children meant not speaking. Children were to be seen, not heard. So what does it say about the character and the nature of God that God would choose to come into the world as a baby? In fact, how would you finish this sentence? The fact that God came as a baby means God is what? What words would you use? If you're watching online right now, I invite you to go to the chat and type in your end of that sentence. The fact that God came as a baby means God is what? What words? Now, children appear in the Christmas story earlier than Bethlehem. The start of Luke's gospel tells us about Zechariah and Elizabeth, a couple too old to have a baby beyond childbearing years. And yet they're visited by an angel who tells them, you're going to have a child. Think about that, a couple at a point in life when their primary concerns were going to the store to buy walkers and dentures, that now they're having to shop for baby clothes and diapers. But their child would be the one who prepared the way for Jesus. In fact, John is the first one to give testimony to who Jesus is while in utero. When Mary and Elizabeth visited each other while they were both expecting, the baby inside of Elizabeth leapt for joy. But why would God not choose a grown adult like a Moses or like the disciples to prepare the way for Jesus? Why a baby? And children in the Christmas story actually appear earlier than this, all the way back hundreds of years to the prophecies of Isaiah. And that's where I want to spend some time this morning. Because Isaiah speaks quite a bit about children, words and verses that are reclaimed many years later to speak of Jesus. And it's in Isaiah that we first read about Emmanuel, God with us. Isaiah was the prophet to the king of Judah named Ahaz. Two nations to the north of Judah, Ephraim and Aram, have come together to form an alliance to resist Assyria. They're inviting other nations to join them. If they get enough people to join in, maybe we can resist Assyria. But Judah will not join. So now Ephraim and Aram have declared war on Judah, and it's thrown the whole nation into a panic. So Isaiah goes to the king to speak a word of comfort. Now calm down. Rest easy. Everything is going to work out. In fact, the prophet literally says to King Ahaz, within 65 years, Ephraim will be too shattered to be a people. Wait, what? 65 years? 65 years from now, things will work out? Would that be a word of comfort to you? If you're facing a very pressing urgency right now, and somebody says, calm down, take it easy, it's all going to work out 65 years from now. How many of you expect to be around 65 years from now? Lift a hand in the air. How many, literally, if you here in the room believe you expect to be alive 65 years from now, would you lift a hand high in the air? all of you. Okay, I see a few. Now I got to put mine down because I don't expect it. How many hands do we have out there? If you expect to be here, I see one over there. Keep it up. If you don't mind, keep it up for a minute. Keep your hands up for just a minute because I want to try something here. Those of you with the hand up, keep it up. And to the rest of you, look around. How many hands do you see? What is Isaiah saying to the king? He's saying, I want you to be a people who will look beyond your own pressing needs for comfort and do what's in favor of those with their hands up. The few. The future. Isaiah must have known that this was a tall order to actually practice. To say to somebody who was afraid, who needs God now to take care of them, to look beyond all that and focus on the future generations. So Isaiah says to the king, ask God for a sign that this is indeed what God is going to do. Just ask him for a sign. And the king of Judah feigns this super spirituality. He said, no. I would never put God to the test. No. I will not ask for a sign. The fact is, he didn't want a sign because he was already working to form an alliance with Assyria. You know the old saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. He was already in cahoots with the enemy because he would do whatever it takes to make sure that the comfort he's looking for right now will be met. He's taken matters into his own hands. So Isaiah says, all right, then I'll give you a sign. And he says, you see that young woman? Some scholars believe he pointed at his own wife. And he says, therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. Look, the young woman is with child and shall bear a son and shall name him Emmanuel. When the Old Testament was translated into Greek, the word in Hebrew that means young woman was translated into Greek with a word that means more than that. It also means virgin. And that is what the New Testament latched onto, that a virgin will have a son, that it emphasizes this miraculous activity of God, the immaculate conception, so that all of the attention got put on the fact that Jesus was the product of a miracle. Now, not meaning to take away from that, the point is, that's not what Isaiah said. The words taken and borrowed from Isaiah to be applied to Jesus was not about a miraculous event. Isaiah was simply pointing out a fact of nature. My wife will conceive one day, and she will bear a son. And we're going to name him Emmanuel, God with us. What was the point? The point is, Isaiah was saying to the king, and he was saying to the whole nation, that if you want to experience God's presence, then look beyond your own immediate present need for comfort and focus on the generations that will come after you. Father Elias Shakur is a Palestinian Christian and Israeli. He is a strong advocate for peace and a former archbishop of the Greek Orthodox Church. He gave a lecture one time and he was asked after the lecture, will there ever be peace in the Middle East? He said, only when we choose to love our children more than we hate our enemy. Then there will be peace. You could say that that is exactly what Isaiah was saying to the king of Judah. That when you will look beyond your own present emergencies and crises and need for comfort and focus on what you want God to do for you right now and look ahead at those coming after you and do what is in your power right now to favor them and to focus on their needs, you'll experience God's hope and God's comfort That is why children appear throughout the Christmas story. It reminds us that God's great mission, the mission of Christmas, is to invest in future generations, to invest in their need. And as pointed out in the Christmas story with Herod calling for the execution of all the male babies in Bethlehem, it reminds us our children are at risk. And the world needs communities of faith that will place the needs of children at the forefront. It still does. Listen to a few facts. Every 10 seconds, a child somewhere in the world dies of hunger. Last year, there were over 15 million AIDS orphans worldwide. Every 10 seconds, a child dies from malaria. Over 85,000 children die each year from unsafe drinking water and dehydration. The average age of a homeless person in the U.S. is 7 years old. And by our own newspaper headline today, the church has its fair share of contributing to the abuse of children. What God said through the prophet long ago and says to us today is, I'm looking for communities of faith who will focus on the needs of children and do what is within their ability to care for those who are going to come generations after we are gone. You remember a moment ago when I mentioned that it was legal in Rome to practice the abandonment of children. The only people at that time who would take care of abandoned children were slave traders. They would come and gather these children and raise them as their own so that they could turn around and sell them and make a profit. When did all that change? When did it become unlawful to abandon children and for slave traders to take possession of them? When Christians came along and said, because we worship a Lord who said, let the children come to me, we believe that if children matter to him, they ought to matter to us. And they would gather these abandoned children and bring them into their community. Some scholars say this is where infant baptism started, just like we did a moment ago. It started because communities of faith said, children are not unimportant. In fact, they are most important. They are loved by God. They matter eternally. We should baptize these children as a reminder that because they belong to God, they belong to us too. What we can say for sure is that this is when the role of godparenting started. Couples, families within church communities would take these children into their own homes and raise them as their own so that when they were baptized, these families would take special vows as godparents. What children teach us in the Bible story that when God comes along and calls Zechariah and Elizabeth to have a baby, when God comes as a baby, it just means God is being true to form. God is calling our attention, begging for it, in fact, to look for the children and to focus on their needs down the road. You know, at St. Luke's this year, we've done a lot of work focusing on the future. We've had a team of staff leaders and an equal number of lay leaders in our church working with a consultant focusing on the future vision of St. Luke's and where we believe that God is taking us. Now, there's not a lot of detail to give you about that now, but there will be. Starting January the 8th, we're going to have a worship series on our future vision, and we're going to lay that out to you on January the 30th. But just a few weeks ago, the different groups that are working on pieces of that vision came to give an update about where they are in their work. So I'm going to give you a taster this morning, because the group working on outreach and their study of needs in the community shared some things that for me personally, I found it fascinating. And so I invited Pastor Nicole and Lisa Rockesey, if they would, to come and give us just a snippet of what they shared in that report that night.
Well, Well, as Pastor Rob has shared, the Christmas story reminds us that God's mission has always been to invest in the lives of those who are coming after us. And as Lisa Rockesy, one of our outreach team leaders, and several other leaders started dreaming and researching about the needs in our community and how God was calling us to respond, we stumbled upon a startling statistic that pointed us in the direction of where we think God is calling us to serve next.
We learned that Indiana has one of the highest infant mortality rates in the entire United States. This rating puts us on par with the infant mortality rates in developing countries from the former Soviet Union. And what's worse is that this infant death rate is double for children of color and children living in poverty. Now, the infant mortality rate is so significant because it's what social scientists call a keystone measurement, or a statistic that's an indicator of the overall health or brokenness of a system of resources. So if a community has a high infant mortality rate, it's an indicator that the housing, education, food, and healthcare resources are not effectively supporting families. And the ones who pay with their lives are infants and children.
But here's what we also learned, that if we want to turn the tide on infant mortality in our community, we have to begin with diapers. Now, this is how you know that this is God's mission and not my mission or Lisa's mission, because we have five children between us who are all out of diapers. And we swore that we would never, ever, ever go back to them.
But here it is, and we hope you'll navigate this with us, because providing diapers is a nightmare for many mothers in Indianapolis today. In fact, a mother working full-time with a minimum wage job will spend 30% of her income just on diapers, and of all our federal programs put in place to support low-income parents, none of them cover diapers. This creates what's called the diaper deficit, where families cannot provide children with this basic need, and a whole host of physical and mental challenges compound and contribute to a rising infant mortality rate.
And offering mothers diapers and meeting a need that is not met anywhere else allows us to connect these parents and their children to wraparound services that work together to decrease the infant mortality rate. What this means is that we are starting with diapers, but we are not ending there. For every mother who is enrolled in our monthly diaper pantry, we'll have access to our own Crooked Creek food pantry, to our Freedom School, to our Back to School Extravaganza, to our Luke's Leaders, Angel Tree, English as a New Language, and our Benevolence Ministries, just to name a few. What happens is that our church begins to wrap each family with resources that help children to not only survive infancy, but to thrive throughout their childhood.
We will be a place where families in poverty experience that the lives of their children matter to God, and this church will wrap its arms around them like Jesus wraps his arms around us.
Thank you.
So I can just imagine that in the future, as we lean into this, we're going to discover a lot of other ways we can be in ministry to families in very real need, close by to us, and then in other places, communities watching us online. We're finding out more and more St. Lukers are watching in same area vicinities, Fort Wayne, Evansville, other places, and we're going to look at how can we duplicate mission activity in those places as well. So I look forward to where this goes, but what about right now? What can we do today to help children? Well, our Angel Tree Ministry still has how many children? 23, is it? Around 20, a little bit more, who are in need of sponsoring. So you can go by the Angel Tree table to get the cards of the last names of children and know that we're helping entire families. Many children we support are also kids who get meals at their schools. Now that adds a big need to families during the holidays because they're not getting breakfast, they're not getting lunch at school. The support for meals at home becomes even greater. So those sponsorships include providing meal cards or gift cards to buy groceries, which families need. So that's something we can do today. Another If you are so blessed and fortunate to be able to leave a gift to support others, we still have a number of families who have been displaced because of the fires a couple of weeks ago in the apartments in Nora. Bob Dillingham in our church is boots on the ground, working with the services, helping with families, and they still have several families who are displaced. And you can go online to leave a gift, as you can see on the screen, or drop something by the office marked to support families for support with the apartment fire in Nora. Anything of that nature, we'll make sure it goes to the cause. Should we receive any funds that go beyond the needs, it will support Family Promise, which does the same thing. We've been a part of that for a number of years, helping homeless families. Now, a lot of this involves money. We're not all able to give money. But there's one last aspect of this story I want us to think about this morning. We change the future. The power of Christmas is God gives us the ability right now to change the future for the better. And part of the way we do it is not just by helping children in need, but when we teach our own children that there's a connection between Christmas and caring. When we help our children grow up in that knowledge, it changes the future. So here's a fun event that you can do. We're calling it Operation Cookie Drop. Decorating cookies that are going to be made to take to people who could use some Christmas cheer, a fun activity for family and something that can be of benefit to others. Take a look at this video.
You make a cookie and you drop it on the floor.
Operation Cookie Drop is actually where kids and their parents get to make cookies and give them to people who are lonely during the holidays. So what do you guys think about that?
I just think it's a good idea because it gets people in the holiday spirit and it just makes them happy for the holidays. I would give like my parents one, my grandma.
Me too.
Grandpa.
Tim.
And then I get eight of them.
So this Saturday, the 18th, 9:30 to 11:30, the Fellowship Hall, families can come and do this together and look at ways to give them to people who could just use some uplifting, some encouragement. And it begins to teach our kids there's a connection between Christmas and caring. Let me close with this story. Many of us are familiar with the story behind the hymn, It Is Well With My Soul, written by Horatio Spafford. The Great Chicago Fire had devastated his business, and he and his family spent two very tough years beginning to build life back together again. But finally, things were starting to open up, kind of like our world today. So for Christmas 1873, the Spafford said, you know what, we need to get away. We need a big trip to just take our minds off all this struggle we've been through. Let's go to Europe. So they decided to go to Europe for Christmas. But a last-minute business need kept Horatio Spafford at home. He sent his wife and their four daughters ahead and said that he would join them in Europe. But on the way, their ship collided with another and sank. The wife was the one survivor. When she was rescued and made it to England, she sent a cable to her husband with just two words, "Saved alone." When Horatio Spafford got that message, he said to a friend, "The only thing I feel right now is that God is somehow telling me that I need to remain faithful. I need to remain faithful." He boarded a ship, and as he was making the trip over, when they got to the place where the ship sank with his family aboard, the captain pointed this out. But rather than look down into the dark water, he looked up and he felt this spiritual sensation come over him and begin to put words in his head as he just focused on God. "When peace like a river attendeth my way and sorrow like sea billows roll. But it is well. It is well with my soul." When he reached his wife, he found out she too had just days before had a similar experience. When she had been rescued from the ship, making their way to England, all she wanted to do was jump in the ocean and join her daughters. But she felt God stop her and say, Anna, you've been spared for a purpose. The Spaffords went back to Chicago. Their business continued well, but something was amiss in their lives. Making money just did not mean that much anymore. They had strong religious convictions. They felt led to move to Jerusalem and start a mission colony for the poor. Now, while they had strong Christian conviction, they were not there to proselytize anybody. They weren't there to convert people. They were simply there to minister to any person who had a need, regardless of their race, nationality, or religious belief. And that's what they did. They had two children who went with them, two children who lived to maturity. And when they died, their daughter Bertha, who had been raised in this environment to care about the needs of others, expanded the ministry. Christmas Eve 1925, she was walking to Bethlehem with her children and husband for the Christmas Eve services. And on the way, they met a Bedouin family, a father with his sick wife and their baby and a donkey trying to get to Jerusalem. She took them back to the city, put them in their colony, but during the night, the wife died. And the husband said, I can't take care of my baby. Will you take my baby? And she did. Within days, she found herself with more children to take care of. And the mission of the colony began to change. It became a children's center, a children's hospital, ministering not only to kids, but to entire families. It became an orphanage. It became the Spafford Children's Center that is still in existence today, caring for the needs of families, helping women understand their rights and claim their voice, helping children, ministering to all the needs of a family that came from a family going through a desperately needy time, but they chose not to focus on the comfort that they need now. They chose to focus on the future and those who come after them. And they raised a daughter who believed that. And it reminds us today that the great hope of Christmas comes to people who experience Emmanuel, looking beyond ourselves to how God can use us to give hope to the future. So let us close as we hear these beautiful songs of faith and join our voices too in singing them.